94.3 WYBC, the rhythm of the city. I'm Juan Castillo, and this is the Electric Drum. It is my pleasure this morning to have with me a 30-year veteran of Channel News 8 here in the city of New Haven. You know him, Keith Koontz. How you doing, brother?
I'm doing great, Juan. Great seeing you, as always.
Congratulations, 30 years in the business.
You know what? It went by just in a, it seems like a split second, you know, it's been a while, but I still feel, you know, you and I have a lot in common. Both feel young and vibrant, still doing our thing.
Absolutely. So let's start with your history.
Okay? Yeah.
Where were you born?
I was actually born in Palo Alto, California, which is a suburb of San Francisco, about 30 miles south. At the time, my late father was a doctor. He was a brilliant surgeon. He was a resident at Stanford University Hospital. My mom was a teacher in California, and that's where I was born, second of three children.
So how long did you live there?
We lived in California until I was about 12 years old, then moved to Long Island, New York. So it was a little bit of a transition, you know, being a guy from California, then moving to New York and dealing with the snow and kind of the faster pace. But for a long time, I considered home kind of on both coasts.
Okay.
But, you know, as time goes on, I've become, you know, pretty much an Easterner all the way. Married a girl from Queens, New York. And so if you're not an Easterner before you do that, then you're going to be an East Coast guy.
There you go. So now what high school did you go to?
I went to Great Neck North High School in Great Neck, New York, class of 78. And, you know, from there, I went actually out to California to go to college. I, you know, at that time, I really missed the West Coast, and I went to the University of Santa Clara. Wow, after after Great Neck North. So I'm comfortable on both coasts, I guess you'd say.
So did you start thinking about, you know, getting into this business, into television, while you were in college?
Juan, I got to tell you, I was thinking about it even before I was in college. I mean, I was one of these, and you'll appreciate this, I was one of these kids who always loved radio, listening to the radio. When I was a kid, I used to listen to a lot of not only, you know, a lot of soul on the radio. I won't say Don Cornelius, but
Frankie Crocker's
who I was talking about, but also a lot of news radio. So I kind of grew up on Long Island listening to WCBS, yes, and always had a great interest in broadcasting and news. I was a kid who asked a lot of questions. I know that around my dinner table, and for people of our era, we remember before there was cable news, there were the three networks, of course. There was Walter Cronkite and you know, Max Robinson, and my family in those days would get together when my father got home in time, and we'd have dinner as a family, and we used to always watch Walter Cronkite while we were eating dinner. And I always kind of dreamed of doing what Walter Cronkite did, and I've just been really fortunate to have been able to have done that for so many years.
So now while you were there in college, you got into communications?
I did.
You did, okay. And In terms of what you see today, right?
Right.
They're talking about the fake news and that. And
yeah.
I mean, you know, Walter Cronkite was like the most trusted man.
Absolutely, yeah.
Right? You know, what's your take on that?
It's a tough environment now because I think the downside of social media is the fact that so many people can get their voice, a voice, to the public in an unfiltered manner. In my line of work, we deal with, obviously, we want credibility of sources. We want to make sure we get things right. And we try our best to be fair and not be opinionated, that we tell both sides of every story. Clearly, at this point, there are fake news sites and sites that slant things even one way or the other in an attempt to influence people adversely. So I think the environment of social media has made it a lot harder in one respect, that our customers, people who read and listen and watch news, have to be much more discerning of who they get it from.
And that's part of education also, having, you know, teaching kids to be critical thinkers.
Absolutely.
You know, and so as you do your job today, right, do you find yourself really focusing a lot on making sure that it's right and you got the right information as far as investigative pieces?
I think it's kind of always been that way, but I think in a lot of respects you're right. I think nobody wants to be inaccurate. And I think especially in this day and age, if you're inaccurate, you're going to be called on it a lot more readily. I mean, you see what's been going on with Facebook and Twitter and the scrutiny a lot of organizations have come under.
Right.
And so I think everybody is under a lot more pressure to be balanced and to be fair and to tell all sides, especially, you know, in the current environment we're in.
Right. So you graduate from college.
Yes.
Clara. And so now here comes the real world.
That was tough. that was a tough transition. In fact, I was very close to not being in journalism, only because it took me a little while to get that first job. I had a really good internship my last year at Santa Clara. It was for the KPIX, which is a station out in San Francisco, California. And I had a really good internship. I thought I had a great resume, but at the time, it was really, really tough. I'm sure you can appreciate this. Back then, this was pre-cable. There weren't 500 stations. There weren't, you know.
Not a lot of jobs.
Yeah, there weren't a lot of jobs out there. So I got lucky when I got back home to New York. And I never really considered staying out west because I had met the woman who would be my wife the prior summer.
Okay.
When I was in summer school. So I was kind of crazy in love. I wasn't staying on the West Coast. So I was coming back. So I came back. The only job I could find in journalism was at a little local newspaper, which was called the Great Neck Record, which would be kind of like, I don't want to say it would be like equivalent to a news flyer now, but it was one of those things where it had a lot of coupons in it.
And they
had a couple of articles here and there.
Right.
So these folks were nice. They gave me a little job so I could make a little money.
Great.
And I was lucky because they sent me on an assignment one day to do a story on a local woman who lived in my community. Her name was Doris McMillan. I think she might still be around. I don't even know if you know her. She was a former anchor woman in New York. She worked at WABC for a while, and I think one of the other TV stations, WNBC, I believe, for a while. So they sent me out here to interview her. And we got along. I think she probably thought, oh, this is a young guy who really wants to, ambitious, right? So she said, look, I know about an internship program at WNBC. You know, it might be something you might want to look at. So she kind of gave me the hookup. So I got this internship at NBC, and that was really the first real break I had, and you know, things moved on from there.
Right. That's great. That's great. So tell me about, you know, you've always, for the last 30 years, you've been in the business, but
yeah,
working at Channel 8. How long at Channel 8?
I have been there. I started there in 1987. It's funny. Ann Nyberg and I started within a few months of each other in 1987. I always tell them that was their best draft year. That their 87 draft was their best.
Yeah.
But I left. I went to Jacksonville, Florida, for a couple years. I'd worked at Channel 8 from 1987 to 98, and you know, felt like I needed a little change of scenery. So I took a job in Jacksonville, Florida, and I was there for about 18 months. And just kind of a lucky turn of events, that station kind of went under, as some TV stations do. And at the same time, they were interested in me coming back here. So I kind of narrowly escaped one bad situation, got back in a good situation.
Right,
so.
Right. This is Juan Castillo, just checking out the Electric Drum, and I'm speaking with Keith Koontz, of course, Channel 8 newscaster, anchorman, and we're talking about his life. So, working at a station like Channel 8, which is local, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, tell me your philosophy in terms of, you know, how you see your role at the station and how it links with the community.
Well, I think as time has gone on, I've worked really hard to try to be involved in the community and be involved in helping as many organizations as I can. I think it's important at a local station, a station of our size, that we get out in the community and people know that the people on television are not just kind of fly-by-night people who aren't caring at all about what's going on around us. So, you know, it's important for me to be involved in a lot of events. I've always enjoyed it. And I think it's really helped
many events.
Many events. And happily, I think it's kind of added to my longevity here in many respects, because you know, a lot of people know you on a personal basis and don't just see you as somebody on TV. I mean, we've had a million people come through Channel 8 who really haven't had the attitude that they're part of the community.
Right.
And a lot of times, those people don't last.
And you live here.
I've lived here. I lived in.
So they can see you at Stop and Shop.
They see me all the time at Stop and Shop. You know, and they're saying, "Wow, you look better in person than on TV." I'm like, "What are you talking to?" But yeah, I mean, it's been good. I lived in Westville for a long time.
Right.
And then after we got back from Florida, wife and I moved to Hamden. So we've been in the area for 30 years. Loved it all the time.
Let's talk about your family.
Yeah.
You raised two wonderful
girls. Oh, my gosh. I'm so proud of my girls.
Two of which actually interned here at the WYBC.
They are, yeah.
We love them. Tell us about them.
Well, my oldest daughter is Candace, and she lives in New York City now. Very proud of her. She went to Harvard out of Hamden High School. Worked on Wall Street for a couple of years, is now in the process of getting her master's in business from Columbia.
Awesome.
So very, very proud of her. Just a wonderful young lady. Still has the broadcasting itch, so maybe after she makes her mark on Wall Street, we might see her back on the air.
Well, she's got it in the genes. They both do.
Yeah.
And Amber
is... is a great young lady also graduate of Hamden High. She was a great athlete at Hamden High, played basketball and tennis. Went to UConn, works two jobs now. She works at ESPN for ESPN Magazine. And also proud to say she works part-time in the News 8 sports department. She's been doing some reports for us at News 8. And I always tell people, when the day comes when she's sitting on the set and tossing to me out in the field, that's when I need to get out of the business. But so we're getting to that point. But she's doing well, and real proud of both of them.
Now, all of that couldn't happen without your wife.
Oh my gosh!
You know, the foundation, right? You know, the rock, right? Let's talk about her a little bit.
You know, I've told this story. I don't know if you've heard this before, Juan, but I met my wife because I was having trouble in college. I have to set the story up. When I was at Santa Clara, I had 1 year where I kind of fooled around a little bit. So in order for me to graduate on time, my mother said, "You're graduating on time. You better find a way to graduate on time." So when I came back to New York during the summer of my junior and senior year, I had to try to find a summer school classes to make up these credits I missed. So I went out to Long Island University, which was 45 minutes from my house, and I happened to meet this beautiful girl there, and we started going out, and fell in love, and the rest is history. And I always tell people, if I hadn't have messed up in school, I never would have met her. So sometimes good things do come out of messing up a little bit, but she really is the rock of the family, always has been. She went from Long Island U. She's got a master's from the University of Pittsburgh. She was in business. She went from business to education, has been a teacher in the New Haven schools for 15, 20 years, happy, still run the house. And, you know, they say that in order for a man to be really successful, you know, you need that woman with you.
Yes.
And I'm not going to make the mistake of saying behind you, because I know I'd hear about it, but alongside or in front of you. So I've been really lucky in that respect, and she's wonderful.
So how do you balance what is happening to the country politically, your own feelings as far as politics? How do you balance that when you go on the air?
Well, I mean, that's a real good question in this climate. You know, I think people would be lying if they said obviously they didn't have an opinion, because everybody goes in that voting booth and makes a choice. I think most responsible newsrooms, mine included, we've got enough people looking at what goes on the air to, if it's slanted in one way or the other, that somebody's going to raise their hand and say, we need to be fair, we need to tell the other side, we need to include another opinion on this. So I think the key is to have kind of layers of different people looking at things. So even if you might have a bias one way or the other, there's somebody over there to at least raise a red flag.
That's great. So now, in terms of some of the folks that mentored you, you know, when you got into broadcasting, talk about some of those folks.
Well, I'd say one of the first people I really looked at, and I don't want to say idolized, because that's probably the wrong word, but I think one of the first people I looked at on a consistent basis and said, wow, maybe I can do what I want to do, was looking at Brian Gumbel when he was on the Today Show.
Yeah.
I think he was a groundbreaker for a lot of people. When I was in college, there was a gentleman named Dennis Richmond who was on the air in San Francisco, African American guy who was really a standout guy, and those were mentors. And my first job, my first internship, as I said, in TV was at WNBC. And believe it or not, our Sue Simmons, who was on the air for a long time.
Right. Here and also here, in New York.
Yeah, she started actually in New Haven.
Yes.
And she was very helpful to me and very encouraging. Mm. And then, you know, no matter where you are, you really need to try to look for people who are a little older than you, a little more schooled than you, to give you a little advice. And now it's kind of flipping on me now, because I see there are a million young people now asking advice of me, which is a nice thing.
Right, right. In light of that, right, you know, it's a tough business.
Tough, yep.
Jobs are not as plentiful as they used to be, you know.
I mean, right.
I mean, you got a lot of cable stuff and
right,
all that stuff,
right?
You know, but on a local level, that right. is difficult. Right?
That's true, yeah.
Yeah, tell me what do you say to young people who are trying to get into the business?
I tell people the same thing people told me, to kind of A, get in wherever you can. B, if you love it, you aren't going to worry about the hours. And C, you just have to kind of show a lot of real commitment. I know that. One of my first jobs, actually my first on-air job, was in a town, Florence, South Carolina, and it was a small town. I remember driving down there for the first time, and I drove down, and I stopped in a gas station in this town, and I said to the guy there, "Where is Florence?" And the guy is like, "You're in Florence." So that kind of gave me an idea how small the place was.
Yes.
But when I was there, you know, a job opened up. It was Florence and Myrtle Beach. It was one of these places where the main station was in Florence. They had a little bureau in Myrtle Beach. And the Myrtle Beach bureau job opened up, and the news director, you know, called us all in the room, said, "Look, the Myrtle Beach bureau position's open. Does anybody want it? You'll have to work by yourself. It's going to be a lot of running around. Does anybody want it?" And I'm looking around. I'm like, nobody's raising their hand.
Right.
So I'm like, hey, I'll take it. So So I did that, and I tell people that I think the key is that if there's an opportunity out there and you really want it, you've just got to go for it, not worry about it. Ours is not a 9-to-5 business, and the people who succeed realize it's not a 9-to-5 business and aren't going to grumble about working the occasional holiday, aren't going to grumble about if their shift starts at 3 o'clock in the morning or if their shift doesn't end until midnight. I've found the people who have done well are the ones who are willing to say, I really love doing this. And that makes it easier to deal with the other parts of it. Like even now, I mean, I've been in the business, I guess my first job was in about 84. So you can do the math. That's a lot of years, right? And now, I mean, my job entails as morning and news anchor at News 8 now. I mean, my alarm clock wakes up, rings at 2 o'clock in the morning.
Right.
And a lot of people would say, wow, my, you know, people come up to me all the time, like, how do you do that? And, I mean, I love what I'm doing. I'm blessed. I have great coworkers. I love the shift. And, you know, you hack the hour. So I go to bed at, you know, 7 o'clock at night. It's not that big a deal to me.
Right.
And I think that kind of attitude has helped me kind of succeed all these years. I found it 10 times harder when I was working the other side of the day. When I was working from 3 o'clock to 11:30 at night, that was 100 times harder for me.
Because then you come home and then that's your evening.
Oh my gosh.
Till 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning.
You come home at midnight, you're right. Wired.
Right.
You're up until 3 o'clock. And during those days, my kids were still young.
Right.
So it meant me getting up with the kids sometimes. My wife was going out. So I felt like I was spending my whole life living on like 3 hours sleep for about 15 years.
Right.
But now, you know, now the kids are... you know, the kids are grown. If I want to go home and take a nap, I can take a nap. So that's it's awesome. All good now, right?
That's awesome. So let's talk about the diversity in the workplace today as far as news.
Yeah. Yep.
When you got in, it wasn't much.
No.
Right? You know, tell me about mm-mm. that journey.
You know, it seems like things kind of go in waves. That there are times when the representation seems a lot better, and then there'll be times when, for whatever reason, it, you know, we don't have the proper representation. I know the first couple of stations that I worked at in Savannah and Florence, South Carolina, I can remember only having one or two other people of color as colleagues in front of the camera. I think it's getting better gradually. I think more managers and management of television radio stations do understand now that that stations have to represent the diversity of the community. Right. So I think it's getting better, but I think we're a long way from being where we need to be.
During this period of time, especially early on, did you feel like you were carrying, you know, your race on your back? Talk about that.
You know, I wouldn't put it quite that starkly, but I know I didn't want to mess up.
Yeah.
I mean, I think to this day that's kind of my prevailing prevailing opinion because you know, if you mess up, if I mess up, you know, it's going to be in the paper, it's going to be in the media. You never want to let people down, let your family down, let anybody down.
Right.
So I think in a way that might be a burden, but in a way that keeps you to a higher standard.
Fuels you.
Right, it does. I mean, not that I think I would, you know, make any big serious mistake anyway, but I think if you look at it on those terms, you know, you don't want to be the person who people are looking at and saying, you know, wow, there's somebody who messed up.
And how do we get more African Americans involved with what you do?
I mean, I know that that I talk to a lot of kids,
yes.
talk to a lot of school groups, tell people about the profession, you know, tell people who have an interest in writing. I always tell people that if you love to write, there's a job for you in the media. You know, I've always loved to write. I think that's, in fact, when people, you know, ask me, well, what do you think, you know, you're best at? I always say, I think I'm a really good news writer. I've always loved to write. So I think if the more kids who are involved in writing, who are aware of the profession, are aware that there are jobs available in the profession, the better off we're going to be. And frankly, like a lot of careers, I think a lot of these kids, unfortunately, their mind is not open to the possibilities.
Yeah.
And I think that's, you know, that's a problem all of us have to work on.
Right. I didn't ask you to prepare for this question, but I'm going to ask you anyway. What's the best advice you ever gotten from who? Do you remember?
I'll tell you, I'm sure my parents gave me great advice. I can't think of anything in particular, but I had a friend when I was a young reporter here in New Haven, and this was somebody who was an executive in the hospital industry here in New Haven at the time. And I remember he was older than I was by about 10, 15 years, so I kind of looked at him as, you know, here's an African-American guy who's in a high-stress situation, who really handles it well. I was always impressed by this guy. And he said to me, when people try to get you down, instead of doing something destructive, like, you know, going out and having three drinks or doing something, exercise. Wow. And it sounds crazy. I mean, it wow. sounds kind of odd, but I've kind of always kind of thought about that.
Yeah.
And so anytime I'm really stressed, my first reaction isn't to, you know, let me go home and have a drink or let me do something like that. That I normally go to the gym or go play pickup basketball or tennis and kind of work it out that way.
And I'm not playing against Amber, though.
Well, not playing against, well, I think the last time I beat her, I think she was probably 12. Yeah, I don't mess around with her anymore. But believe it or not, I think that was a great piece of advice, and I got it about 25 years ago, and I think it's really helped me kind of stay on the straight and narrow.
Well, listen, dude, I want to thank you for coming down.
It's always a pleasure.
You know,
one.
And, you know, 30 years, and you know, we'll look if you do another 30.
My first 30.
Your first
I'm
30.
Just getting warmed up.
Yeah,
hopefully we'll be sitting here again 20, 30 years from now.
Go.
That'd be
thank
good.
Thank you so much, man. We'll see you on television.
Juan, my pleasure.
Right.
Great seeing you as always.
Juan Castillo, which is this electric drum. I know you've been inspired. We will see you next week.